Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about 2019 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race champion, Pete Kaiser. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we forget to mention that three women are probably going to finish in the top 10 for the first time ever, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
That is right. Iditarod has a new champion. And it's really looking like we're going to have three women in the top 10 for the first time in nearly a half century of Iditarodding. Iditarod 47, this one. As for the pride and swelling hearts of Bethel, the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta, maybe all of Western Alaska, Peter Kaiser and eight dogs crossed under the Burled Arch in Nome at 3:39 a.m. Alaska time Wednesday. Fans lined the finish chute on Front Street in Nome very early Wednesday morning, many of them Kaiser's friends and family from the Bethel area, there to help celebrate Kaiser's first win in a race he's thought about since he was just a little kid. The now 31-year-old gets $50,000 and a new Dodge pickup truck. It adds to Kaiser's almost $300,000 in total Iditarod winnings, if you care about such things, as he's taken five top 10 finishes, three of them for fifth place, and finished the Iditarod 10 times in a row ever since he first raced it in 2010. He, of course, also won the Kuskokwim 300, his local race, four times in a row from 2016 to 2018. This year in the Iditarod, he took 9 days, 12 hours, and 39 minutes to get from Willow to Nome. That's not his fastest nor his slowest run, but somewhere right in the middle. To win, Pete Kaiser held off defending champ Your Life Seth Olsom, and it wasn't easy. In the final 77 miles, Olsom's team surged and shaved off 30 minutes from what had been a 42-minute lead for Kaiser and his dogs. My friends, that chase resulted in the 1,000-mile race being decided by a mere 12 minutes. That's the fifth closest finish in all of Iditarod. Here's Life Seth Olsom arriving in Nome at 3:51 a.m. The two dog teams were parked side by side. It was a little chaotic, as it can be with reporters and photographers and all the fans in Nome. Pete picked out a couple of dogs, Morrow and Lucy, from his team to put these customary flowery yellow wreaths on. Those are generally given to the Golden Harness winner. I'm not exactly sure who he picked for that yet. That won't be announced until later. But I have to say, those dogs that get to pose in photos with the winning Iditarod musher, they always look so pleased with themselves, tired, but seeming like they really know that they've done a good job. We've got some pictures on our story at alaskapublic.org by Zachariah Hughes that show the dogs. And there are some official photos there in the finish chute that have to be taken. At that point, handlers can take care of the dogs. So Kaiser was shepherded over to Nome's mini convention center. We are going to hear more from him there in a second. But it should be noted, Kaiser is the first competitor from Western Alaska to win the race since Kotzebue musher John Baker's 2011 victory. He's the only winner hailing from the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta, with the one exception of Dick Wilmarth, who came in first during the inaugural Iditarod in 1973 when he was living in that region. Kaiser is the first Iditarod champion with Yupik roots, and when he was asked about that, he said he hopes his win will spark an interest in the YK Delta and beyond.
Not just Yupik people, but all of the, you know, rural native people from Western Alaska or anywhere in the state for that matter. It really doesn't matter. Anybody who could get a kick out of this is, that's awesome, you know.
How did it feel watching your wife and your family as you came into that shoot? I even heard some people Facebook Live, and they were saying, this is the best day of my life. How does that feel, looking at them coming in?
It's awesome. I mean, this is, like I've said it before, it's not just about me, you know. It's, we have 42 dogs in our kennel, and our support system is incredible, and the whole community and region and everybody out there. And I mean, you saw it tonight. Half the town jumped on jets to come up here and watch me finish, and it's it's incredible. I mean, I'm so humbled by that and appreciative, and it's so motivating. It's very special.
Were there tears in the embrace? She said there were for her.
Yeah, there was.
There were also some questions about Kaiser's style. He's known for being fairly conservative early on in the race and takes extra rest so he can use speed later when he has an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I generally have kind of an idea of what I'm going to do, but it's never set in stone. It's just a lot of these runs, a run can take 5 hours on a good trail, 8 hours on a bad trail, just like this race played out. I mean, all these runs turned out to be 2 or 3 hours longer than they could have been on a good trail. So you got to be able to adjust your rest accordingly, I feel like. And if you just have something put on pen to paper of what you're going to do no matter what, I don't think it's going to work out that great. So
one big move Kaiser made that the well-trained, well-managed, strong, and healthy dogs allowed him to make was pushing all the way up to Caltag to take his mandatory 8-hour Yukon River rest at the end of the Yukon section of trail.
We just got some trail that the team really likes, and we didn't see much of that this race. So my team really likes hard, fast trails where they can go fast, and that was probably the best trail for that type of running the whole race. So when they got on that, they really wanted to roar, and actually held them back for most of that run.
Kaiser's strategy obviously paid off, and big, after so much dog mushing and years of raising up a kennel. KNOM's Ben Matheson talked to Pete's wife, Bethany, in the finish shoot.
I'm really proud of my husband. Super proud of him. It's been a long time coming, so it's really great to finally have him here after being questioned a little bit.
You were watching GPS today?
Yes, it was crazy.
Yep. And how is it to see such a cool turnout here?
It's awesome. It's awesome. But this is where we come from, Bethel. It's a community that will just bend over backwards for people they love. So it's awesome.
Pete talked about a lot of other things, including raising up a kennel all of his own. That is posted as an extended interview here on the I Did a Pod, along with several other clips. And if you've been listening along, you'll remember that Nicholas Petit of Girdwood had been running out in front of much of this race, but Petit's dog stalled on the sea ice between Shaktulik and Koyuk. That cleared the way for Kaiser and Lifeseth Olsom to duke it out for the win. Kaiser said at the finish that as he passed Petit going up the coast, he knew things weren't going well for his competitor.
I had an idea when I got there that there was something going on, so I said hi and he said hi and that was it.
Kaiser gained an hour on Lifeseth Olsom into Koyuk, and from there he maintained the lead, even if it shrank to 12 minutes by the finish. Arriving in third place, her personal best was Jessie Royer at 9:34 a.m. Wednesday. And in fourth, last official check-in with Allie Zirkel was that she left White Mountain about 3:45 a.m. Wednesday morning. Her team was getting close to safety, the last checkpoint before Nome the last time I looked. Not the fastest run times, and Travis Beals in fifth and Matt Hall in sixth seem to have made up maybe a little bit of ground, but for now it's still looking like Zirkel's place is secure. And how about Paige Drobny solidly in seventh? She's not far behind Hall and Beals, well ahead of Ramey Smith, and a serious contender for most improved musher. Which, you know, her and her husband Cody Strath's dogs at their Squid Acre kennel have been a solid team for a while, but she's leapt up in the standings from her highest finish of 25th a couple years ago to potentially 7th place. The award for most improved musher to be given out at the Musher's Banquet on Sunday generally goes to the musher who's improved their finish place the most places. And I'm not entirely sure how they work all that out, but it certainly seems like going from the mid-20s to 7th place and a much higher payout is a big deal. The really big deal is that with Royer in and Zirkel and Drobny headed for 4th and 7th respectively, it really is looking like we're going to see that first ever Iditarod with three women in the top 10. It's a major milestone for the sport of dog mushing, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say about it. And I don't mind admitting it, I have my fingers crossed that it's still going to happen. Definitely would be noteworthy, but I'm really also curious about whether those three highly competitive women even find it particularly surprising, given that they have all been working very hard for a long time to get here. Again, of those three, Royer is the only one into Nome as I'm recording this, and it sounds like weather conditions have been less than ideal in the last stretches of the Iditarod. Here's Royer at the finish.
Yeah. It's been a whiteout, like probably 4 to 12 inch drifts for the whole last 50 miles. Just solid drifts.
Speaking of whiteout, It's time for a listener question about the all-white sort of windbreaker-type material jackets and pants that some mushers wear over their warmer clothes. See what I did there?
Hi there. This is Hannah calling from Bozeman, Montana, and I am curious if you could explain the white suits that the mushers seem to wear over their jackets every so often. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Zach, our trail reporter, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, he just happened to be standing next to Ketil Reitan at the Unalakleet checkpoint a couple days ago. Reitan has finished the Iditarod 7 times. He was waiting for his son, Martin Apayawik Reitan, to arrive with their dog team. Originally from Norway, Reitan has lived in the North Slope community of Kaktovik for many years, hunting, guiding polar bear tours even, and of course, dog mushing. One rookie musher who was standing nearby told Reitan she'd heard he was the toughest man alive, but he demurred. Reitan was wearing a white jacket, not exactly over whites as they're called, but not far off. So, as he does, Zach struck up a conversation.
Right now I have the white atigi parka. So that is used for hunting in the winter and whaling and... good for traveling, and works good for us.
Why is it good for traveling, and why do so many dog mushers wear either the white pants or the over whites on top?
I don't know why everybody use that, but they have, I know they sell some windproof material that is happen to be white. So that's probably take very little room, and it's very practical to just put it on when you need something windproof, and yeah, it works good.
And why are they useful for winter hunting?
Oh, it's like camouflage. So we use it in November when we go sheep hunting up in mountains south of Kaktovik in the Brooks Range. So we need to try to sneak up on the animals, and we also use it for caribou hunting, and we also use that kind of covers when we go out whaling in Kaktovik.
And when you're snow machining, is it just it's a good windbreak, and that's why you...
Yeah, it's a good windbreak, and it's very practical. It's no zippers that break, and no... Velcro that get iced up and stop working when you need it. So it's good, and it's practical because you can just take off the cover and wash the cover if it gets dirty, and you don't have to wash the whole insulation like most other jackets.
And there you have it, Ketil Reitan while in Unalakleet waiting for his son Martin, a rookie in the race. Speaking of rookies, on Wednesday, as the first teams were arriving in Nome, top rookie Richie Beattie was running in 24th, right ahead of Ed Hopkins in 25th, both into and out of Koyuk. Jessica Klaika was in 31st and Ryan Santiago in 32nd, Reitan in 33rd, all of them into Shaktulik. Sebastian Dos Santos Borges was in 34th, on the way out of Caltag, along with Blair Braverman in 35th. Allison Lifka is back in 39th and Victoria Hardwick in 41st. There have also been some scratches not reported here yet. Brett Brugeman, Lev Schwartz, Ryan Reddington, and rookie Nick Wickstrand have had to drop out of this year's race, as well as others we've already mentioned. And a side note, you know we like side notes here. Four-time Iditarod champion Dallas Seavey, again, not running the race this year, did not run the race last year. We've covered that quite a bit, and you can go back and listen to past episodes for more. So Dallas, not running the Iditarod, he did, for the second year in a row, head over to Norway with his team to run in the 750-mile Finnmark Slopet. Today, though, apparently had to scratch from that race. Speaking of scratches, this was first dug up by Anchorage TV station KTVA, who found a post on Seavey's Facebook page. It says that he had taken a rest at one of the checkpoints, hoping that some tightness that he had noticed in his dog's legs would ease up, but he ended up having to scratch, and the post described the team as being otherwise gung-ho and enthusiastic. Well, we at the Iditapod are also still gung-ho and enthusiastic about bringing you more stories from the Iditarod. We have not tired. Can't wait to hear what the next mushers into Nome have to say, including Allie Zirkel of Paige Drobny. Again, cannot say this enough, but friends and fans of Drobny and her squid dogs are very proud of her for, very likely, breaking into the top 10 this year. Alas, that is all the time we have for today. Wish we had some more, but I've got to get going. I'll see you soon, honey. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. We have more Iditarod race coverage at alaskapublic.org and knom.org. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.
You'll now have an audience. You'll have the ability to speak to a lot of people. What do you want to say to them?
I don't know right now, actually. Brain's a little foggy, but yeah, I don't know.
We saw some video today following the Cusco 300 with you and your leg wrestling. You came out a champion in that one. And a little foreshadowing, or is it special that you shared this moment with him and racing to the finish?
All over the place, man. Everybody's
oh,
there.
Yeah. Yeah, yours really taken a beating now the last month. But no, that was all fun and games. Me and you are really good buddies, and it's a pleasure to race against him and travel with him. You know, he's a very humble champion and has been a great champion over the last year for this race. And it's a weird dynamic when you're friends with somebody, but you're also fierce competitors, you know. I mean, I would have been totally bummed out if he would have passed me coming in here. At the same time, you know, that's what we're here to do. We're not drawing straws to see who comes in first, so we're out there to race each other.
What did he say to you in the shoot?
No, I don't remember.
Something in Norwegian.
Said he didn't want to leg wrestle anymore.